There you go. That's Andy Fair with the Lone, wide-eyed and legless. And in studio now I have Nessa Childers, MEP. Good morning, Nessa. How are you?
Good morning.
Now, heavy on the campaign trail. You interrupted your campaign this morning to come in and talk to us.
Oh, absolutely. This is part of my campaign, talking to people through radio stations and yourselves included. Mm-hmm. I very much like community stations. I think they have an identity all of their own, which is really important. So, yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Well, I'm glad to see more women getting involved in the problem. I know you've been involved for years, but it's great to see, because I often find with women, you get less of the rhetoric you get from the men, and I hope that's a compliment, but not from them all, but from most of them anyway, so it's great. Could just give us a background to exactly what an MEP does.
Well, I can talk about myself. That's probably the best way to describe it. I'm a member of the Environment, Public Health and Food Safety Committee, called ENVI, Environment Committee, and I also work, for instance, every MEP is different, they work in different areas. I'm co-chair of MEPs Against Cancer, and I'm chair of the Mental Health Interest Group. I was a psychotherapist, you see, for 25 years before I became an MEP. So that was instantly something that people approached me to do. And also the way we work out there is we network and help NGOs and patients groups, for instance, like European Cancer Patients Coalition. And we try to get involved in coordinating research. I mean, there's a huge amount that the European Commission do in that area in terms of funds for research into cancer and indeed dementia, and we have a dementia strategy now. Mm-hmm. What people perhaps might see in their everyday life is just everywhere, but I'll choose one example: food labelling. When you go into a shop and you see the labels on food telling you how much fat and salt etc. is in it, that's governed by European legislation and governed by legislation that we redid, if you like, in 2010, much against very serious opposition from the food lobby. And when you go into the shops, you will see those labels, and you will know that some of what you're eating and what you know about it is governed by European legislation. Mm-hmm. Tobacco control, another aspect.
And what sort of sanctions will they have? Because there's always talk about a lot of people are more aware because of obesity, and that's so people are quite vigilant in their shopping. But at the same time, you hear cases of maybe mislabeling, saying it's Irish when it's not, or there's this in it when there's not, or medical advances on stuff when it's not. So what's the sanctions?
Well, the sanctions would be the product. Those products are certified and they're examined, for those types of flaws. They would be withdrawn from sale, and very serious fines. I mean, some of it, of course, is criminal conspiracy with the horse meat. There was obviously mislabeling deliberately, and some French bodies associated with that were, and your Romanian ones are in very serious difficulties. But there is surveillance. It's called market surveillance. There is surveillance on these products. We are also looking to verify health claims made by food people making things like probiotics. Do they do what they're supposed to do? Mm-hmm. And that will be, there's a necessity to protect consumers from false claims, if indeed they are false claims.
Okay. Now, I think there's 10 members of the European Parliament, and all with different objectives, of course, and work like yourself. How effective are we over there?
There's actually 12 MEPs, and they're going down to 11.
I thought they might have been going up.
I think we're effective in ways that it's quite hard to see. I wouldn't say it's any different from the Doyle that way. There are people beavering away on all kinds of committees, for instance, that you don't see in public. You see the PAC committee, and probably in European Parliament now you see the Econ Committee, which deals with economics, more publicly visible. But we do a lot of legislation, serious legislation, since the Lisbon Treaty, and I try and communicate it as much as possible. We all do to some degree with newsletters and on the radio, I think there's a certain assumption of what we do. I myself, I think one of the things I would have found myself doing is actually acting in national politics and putting pressure on the government to do something about the Troika, mm-hmm. and now the European Commission and these appalling budgets that we seem intent on going mm-hmm. further and further down this deficit route. So that would be part of my role, is to act at an Irish level in a political sense.
Okay, now when you're on your campaign, just to give a background to yourself as well, you started off, I'm surprised you never went into Fianna Fáil, but you started off with the Greens, then went into Labour, and now you're independent, mm-hmm. of course. Does that mean, like a lot of the public, you've become disillusioned with the party pack as such?
Yes, I think it does. I mean, I have always kept to the same values. And one of the other independents once said that the Labour Party left me rather than the other way around. That is a very good way of describing it. And in my family history, I think you'd find that that is something I was brought up with, to stay with my own values. I could also wonder if I was sort of naive. The party structure in Ireland, it just doesn't work in any political party. The whip system, it leads to a kind of a very, very aggressive environment inside a party, which doesn't do any good for the people out there that are voting. It causes trouble. And you can see now the situation where all these apparent rows are occurring mm-hmm. between Fine Gael and Labour. That's all driven by the heat inside political parties, and the whip system is dysfunctional.
And can you see the independents gaining more strength and more people becoming independent as the years go on and on?
Yes, I can. And in Ireland, that could happen because we have the electoral system whereby it can happen. In Europe, it's not so easy. They have list systems, which in my opinion are quite undemocratic. I would never have survived a list system. I'd have been knocked off the list into the abyss ages ago. But I just think we need to reform our political system urgently, and I don't see any sign of that.
Mm-hmm. And what about the idea of creating jobs in Ireland through European Parliament as well? How effective can that be? That
is done in an indirect way, I have to say. It's not the case that MEPs themselves can create jobs. We can create the environment to do so. We are networkers. But this is one of the things that people say, and I discovered that it isn't direct creation of jobs. But we do have a role to play in there the way everybody else does. And networking is one of them. We have a lot of resources at our disposal for community organisations, which is where I would have been working the mm-hmm. last 5 years, you know, setting yeah. up meetings where people meet with partnerships and people like yourself and others. And I think that that's the most important role, certainly I would have considered, for a centre-left, a Social Democrat MEP.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you're going around the doors, being independent, you wouldn't get as much flack from the people on the doorstep. But the reason I asked you what an MEP does, did you get questions from the people asking you that?
I found that people with me are interested in what most people say is kind of interesting. The first thing they ask is, am I an independent? Mm-hmm. And they ask it in a kind of not a hostile way towards me, but you're not one of them, are you? And then when and it's very, the anger is quite disturbing out there. Mm-hmm. The people are very angry. And then when they look at my leaflet closely, they ask me, am I Erskine Childers' daughter?
Yes, yes.
And that means more even than it might have 5 years ago, because I think my father has become a symbol of everything that was right as opposed to wrong. Mm-hmm. And you'd see that in particular from disillusioned Fianna Fáil voters. But those are the two questions. And after that, they sometimes would ask me what I do, but they're very keen to talk about how, you know, what their issues are, even at a local level. And I would take representations from people the same way councillors and TDs do, and staff do.
Would you like them to see the vote separated?
They are separated from the...
No, well, I know they are on the day, but on different days. Do you think people get confused, for instance, when they go and...
I hadn't thought about that. I don't think so. I think people see two ballot papers in front of them and they vote. It'd be interesting to see the statistics about that. I don't think they should be separated. We work with local councillors a lot as well, and mm. I found as an MEP that most of the connections back at home that I had and that I needed to have for European legislation were in fact with local councillors, not with TDs.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you talk about a democratic and transparent Europe. and sort of involvement in the peacekeeping and what's happening in Russia now. There's a lot of controversy, or will we or won't we, and that sort of thing. What do you think about that?
Well, I think we have to be very careful that we don't, that we're very realistic about our peacekeeping forces, and that we don't become hysterical about anything to do with the military. Our armed forces are unsung to some degree. Their presence in Syria has been overtaken by other news items. I think our peacekeeping role is very important, and to do that, of course, you'll find everybody says this, and at the same time they're cutting numbers in the army. Mm-hmm. We can't have both. And while of course I support neutrality, absolutely, peacekeeping is a different matter, and we can't have it both ways.
But is it realistic though to hold on to neutrality all the time now we're part of the European Union?
I think of course we can, but we have to separate the peacekeeping from the necessity to keep our reputation and our forces for those areas. We can't be completely ridiculous about our armed forces, and that's the way I see it. I really do. And to do that, we can't cut their numbers anymore. Look at the Ukraine. It's a very scary situation for many European countries that we probably don't know that here, but you know, the Eastern European countries like Poland in particular, it reminds them of things that they don't want to be reminded of.
I know, but some of the politicians coming out and they say one thing and do something else. As you know,
find me doing that at a certain point. Decisions have to be made and you have to stick to what you believe in.
And funny, the environment now, we watched a very, very interesting programme on BBC One last night about the earth, and it was to do with the sun and the environment, all to do with animals in our environment, and it was one of the most interesting programmes I ever saw, have ever seen rather. So what changes can we do there?
Well, what changes can we do? The European Union has protected our environment in a way through their directives that not everybody agrees with, of course, but has protected us. I don't think we'd have much of an environment if it hadn't been for the areas of heritage and the protection of birds directive, all kinds of conservation areas. They're all part of European legislation, and we will do more of the same, and that's part of the role for us on the Environment Committee. There is now a definite purpose in actually limiting the amount of toxic chemicals that go into the air. Gradually more and more of them are being banned. We need to do that sort of thing, and we do it on the Environment Committee to protect the air you breathe.
Okay, and now finally you were on the board of the Office of Tobacco Control for 2 years. What do you think of what's happening now with the legislation, with the PACs taking the names?
What you see here and in Europe is the ferocious lobbying by the tobacco groups. Mm-hmm. And I am very, very hostile to tobacco, like James Riley. Mm-hmm. I think it should be banned by 2025. That's probably aspirational, but my father died.
And when you say banned, what do you mean?
I think tobacco should in the end be banned. It would be now. If it was a new substance, it would never be, never get in anywhere. But you find people are personal. My father died of a heart attack when he was 69, and it was almost certainly partly tobacco related.
Do you not think that pushing it underground, it makes it more, attractive to young people?
That's what you hear from the tobacco lobbies, is that it does. I actually don't think so. I think price makes it unattractive for a start to younger ones. Mm. I don't think that's a reason.
But they did it with alcohol in the 30s in America.
They did, but it's not the same thing. I mean, alcohol is another problem. We know that we're going to deal with that, hopefully, certain in terms of putting a floor underneath the price of it. But if you've worked in areas of health, you see the damage that is done by tobacco. And, you know, the addictive qualities of it, and it's scary, and I don't like the idea of young people smoking at all. And if any of your kids smoke, most parents feel a sort of despair once they've started, because it's so difficult to stop. Not impossible, though.
Yeah, well, I agree with the ban in cars and eatings and buildings and stuff like that, but I think the complete ban is just a bit over.
Well, we're starting with the plain packaging. We may be taken to some kind of world court over that, the way Australians were, but I think this is one of the areas where I think James Riley has definitely got something to say, and I agree with his. I believe that anyone working for tobacco lobbyists are the equivalent of the arms industry, and I've exposed them whenever I found them.
Okay, well, I agree with a lot of the things you're saying, except for the complete ban. I think that's a bridge too far.
Well,
I'm pro tobacco. It's just because I think that it's just a bridge too far. And finally, what would you like to say to our listeners now? You're on the campaign. To where are you heading off to when you leave here now?
I'm heading to Rahini and Finglas now to do some canvassing.
Okay, well, do you want to say a few words now to your...
Yes, well, I'd just like to say I hope that I've been informative, and I'd really like to... I'm an elected MEP, I'm already elected, and I'm a sitting MEP, and I'd like to go back out there again and do all the work I've been doing, except more and differently for the next 5 years.
Have you given up all ambitions for going back to the Dáil and being the same?
I have never had ambitions. Okay. If I was elected as an MEP, there's no way I'd go for the Dáil. Even as an independent. If I wasn't, I don't know. I haven't thought. If I wasn't elected as an MEP, I haven't thought beyond a few sentences.
No, I meant you're a young woman. So I mean,
I'm not a young woman.
Oh yes, you are. Yeah, 10 years from now, I'm talking about.
I 10 years. I can't even begin to think about 10 years in the future. But I'm certainly not coming back here if I'm re-elected.
Okay. Thanks very much, Nissa.
Okay,
thank you.
Right.